Now for agribusiness news, markets, and weather from Studio C, this is Agriculture Today.
In farming, it can be a lonely endeavor.
Iowa Representative Randy Feenstra is a member of the House Ag Committee.
And it's a stressful industry when the economy turns and you know, or when the weather, tornadoes, derechos, or you know, drought hits, disease infects flock and stuff like that. This bill, what it does, it allows a connection between the farmer and the regional health centers to establish certified community health behavior clinics for farming and allow hospitals and rural health centers to watch out for farmers and to have them come in and just have an assessment done that they can talk and to get personalized care. And that's what this bill does. And like I said, we don't always think about it, but it's very, very important.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
Agricultural producers and lenders finally have some assurance regarding farm programs in 2024 after the House passed a one-year extension to the 2018 Farm Bill Tuesday, a vote of 336-95. Now, in addition to extending the legislation, the agricultural committees, both House and Senate, have added just over $50 million for ag research and battling the growing problem of feral swine. Politico says the extension is entirely paid with funds already appropriated to USDA and from eliminating the biorefinery, renewable chemical, and bio-based product manufacturing assistance program. However, the funding will expire January 19th. Lawmakers included the extension in the recent continuing resolution, the second CR passed by Congress in the past 60 days, and also found the support of all but two Democrats and 93 Republicans. Following months of impressive growth in small tractor sales in the U.S., large four-wheel drive tractors are taking center stage. For October, the Association of Equipment Manufacturers says the workhorses of the ag industry experienced good demand, with monthly sales up 12.6% over the same time last year, and year-to-date sales up 36.2%. Kurt Blades with AEM explains that much of the demand for the smaller tractors came during the coronavirus shutdown, as many landowners of smaller tracks either bought new machines or traded in older tractors for an upgrade. Unfortunately, he says, overall unit sales of U.S. tractors down 5.6% compared to sales in October of 2022, while combine sales finished 52.1% below last year. Well, in December of 2014, lawmakers and farmers expressed optimism that Cuba would soon become a good trading partner and neighbor as the United States announced the reestablishment of diplomatic relations and executive actions to ease trade and travel restrictions. 9 years later, the numbers just don't show the same excitement. In 2008, annual U.S. ag exports to Cuba hit $711 million. They declined to $185 million in 2015. Export sales then slowly increased back to $371 million last year and, though up more than 7% this year, are still well below the goal of $400 to $500 million this century. Now, Representative Rick Crawford from Arkansas is a member of the House Ag Committee. Once led the charge in Congress based on potential sales of U.S. rice and the warming of relations. Today, however, he points to two culprits for cooling expectations. First, reports began surfacing that American diplomatic personnel in Cuba had experienced unusual, unexplained health problems like ringing in their ears, which was later referred to as Havana syndrome. Then, he says, Cuban President Miguel Díaz-Canel decided to align with Nicolas Maduro in Venezuela following a suspect presidential election that in turn aligns the countries with China, Russia, Turkey, Saudi Arabia, and Iran. It's Agriculture Today.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
Literally, the House Republican majority.
Chip Roy is a member of the Republican Party from Texas, speaking on the floor of the House of Representatives.
What we've accomplished this year is the following. We have increased the debt of the United States $4 to $6 trillion. We don't actually know the amount because we set a date to January of 2025 with skyrocketing interest rates. So it's going to be a $4 to $6 trillion increase in your debt. Check. What else have we done? Well, we passed two continuing resolutions of the Nancy Pelosi spending bills and priorities. Something to the tune of probably about $600 or $700 billion worth of spending when you add the farm bill into it. That's what we've done. That's what the Republican majority has done. When are we going to act like a Republican majority and start fighting? When are we going to do anything to truly cut spending instead of playing games? Yes, we passed seven appropriations bills. Yes, we've adopted some cuts, and I'm proud of those cuts. Yes, we've adopted some strong policies in the NDAA and passing H.R. 2, the border security bill. But all of that is a tree falling in the forest if we are unwilling to lock arms and fight.
Representative Roy serves on the House Judiciary Rules and Budget Committees and is policy chair of the House Freedom Caucus.
I want to see 220 Republicans standing on the steps of this building, pledging to lay it all on the line. I'm tired of the speeches. Don't give me your crap about putting Christmas wreaths, walking around Arlington National Cemetery or in the national cemeteries across America. Don't give me your speeches on Veterans Day, your speeches on Memorial Day. Why don't we put everything we've got, all of our political lives on the line and say we're going to stand up for this country? Who cares if you lose your election? Why does it matter if you're here if you don't do something? We don't have anything to risk. Mean tweets? Who cares? Put it all on the line. Fight for the country. And maybe, just maybe, the American people will look at that and reward you for it. But who cares? We came here to do what's right. No one believes spending money we don't have and indebting our kids and grandkids is right. Nobody. Nobody believes, no rational person, no sane person believes, that an open border with terrorists and cartel members and fentanyl pouring across it is right. Nobody believes that Hamas going across a border into Israel and putting a baby in an oven while people are raping that baby's mother is right. Nobody can possibly believe that. And if they do, and I want to be perfectly clear about this, if you do, you have no business being in the United States of America protesting against us, standing up in defense against that. Moral clarity matters. Moral clarity in the face of evil matters. I am sympathetic to wanting to stand up against Putin and the evils and the horrors against the people of Ukraine. I just want a mission to know how it's going to be accomplished and how the money's being used. And I'm very sympathetic to what happened on October 7th to our friends in Israel. We should help them. I was fine with helping Ukraine until I started learning about all the corruption and the improper use of the money. But we got to pay for it. We've got to actually have sacrifice. You can't write blank checks because then there's no moral authority behind the blank check. If you're the world's ATM, all you're doing is perpetuating the very violence in the wars without sacrifice. That's the whole point.
And speaking of fighting, he said at the end of the day, that's the job of Congress.
It's an honor to serve in this House, but we owe the courtesy to the people that we represent to honor them by fighting for them.
It's Agriculture Today.
This is Agriculture Today.
We have worked with our farmers in our state very closely over the course of, the last 2 years almost now.
Christy Seifert is Executive Director of Government Affairs with the American Soybean Association.
So we started our own internal farm bill process back in 2021 with sending out a survey to our farmers across the 30 primary soy producing states. We held our own series of virtual listening sessions, 12 virtual listening sessions across soy country, 25 hours, gathered a lot of input, packaged those into farm bill priorities that were released a year ago. And we've been working to promote those all over the Hill and with others ever since. We know that budget is critical in the Farm Bill process. And unfortunately, we are in a really challenging budget situation right now to navigate with debt ceiling and what may or may not impact agriculture there. And then, of course, the Farm Bill budget to be determined whether, you know, we have a flat budget scenario, a budget cutting scenario, or a budget increase scenario like we did back in 2002 when we wrote the 2002 Farm Bill under Chairman Combest's leadership. You know, I think budget is going to really help us have a better idea of what is possible. But not knowing what that budget number is, I can tell you the needs in agriculture are very real. For ASA, we heard loud and clear that the farm safety net, the Title I farm safety net, has to be improved, especially for soy. We lived through the worst case scenario in the last few years with the China trade war. You know, we lost our largest export market for a period of time and hardly triggered the ARC element of Title I and didn't trigger the PLC element of Title I. And boy, when you just look at the other economic disruptions we've lived through in the last few years, but also the volatility that's ahead potentially, you know, you want to prepare for disruption. You want a stronger safety net in place. So we've promoted the need to improve Title I farm programs, especially related to ARC and PLC for soybean growers. But we've also promoted some other priorities. Of course, protecting crop insurance is a big one. It's the most effective, most important part of the farm safety net that we've got to protect against harmful amendments that could arise in the Farm Bill process. We want to make sure that crop insurance remains effective, that it remains affordable, that it continues to be a public-private partnership of program delivery. And then I think one other area I'll highlight, there are many, of course, but one more area is trade promotion programs. Knowing that we've lived through the China trade war, the disruptions there, knowing of the volatility globally, you know, we'll never be able to replicate China as a market. They are enormous, not just for soy, but for other U.S. ag products. We want to make sure that we are also growing and expanding trade market opportunities globally. So if we are able to have increased investment in trade promotion programs like MAP, like FMD, that can help us, it can help others in agriculture put our eggs in more baskets and help us longer term.
It's Agriculture Today.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
We have a new speaker in Congress, and we wanted to make sure that there are 60 of us farm agricultural congressional members that have written a letter to Mike Johnson, the speaker, saying it's imperative that we get a farm bill passed.
Randy Feenstra represents the 4th Congressional District of Iowa, member of the House Ag Committee.
Now, obviously, when you think about that farm bill, strengthen crop insurance, open new export markets, fight foreign animal disease, ban China from buying our farmland, these are all key components. But the great thing is last night we passed a one-year extension on the current farm bill, and that's through the continuing resolution that was passed. That will go to the Senate. That will pass. So it gives us a little more freedom to take time and to do this right. So I was really excited about that, what we did last night to extend that farm bill for one more year. But that doesn't mean that we're going to just wait a year. It just gives us several months to make sure that we get this farm bill right and get it passed, hopefully in January or February of next year.
With so many concerns on the deficit, the debt, and budgets, how will this move forward?
We've had a lot of discussions about the farm bill, and what we're doing is looking at offsets, meaning we're going to try to keep the cost of the farm bill over the last 5 years. We're going to try to keep that the same. You know, we believe that when you have funds for the farm bill, 0.1% is spent on the farm bill. So it's very small peanuts in essence of what we spend on everything else in our country. And you think about the breadbasket to the world, literally to the world, that we got to provide and make sure that we're taking care of our producers. So that's why it, to me, it's so important. Obviously dollars and cents are important. But our return on investment is amazing when it comes to the farm bill and what it does.
Easy to be focused on the growing side, the domestic side of ag, but what about the importance of trade?
Yeah, again, if you think about the export market right now, I mean, all our commodity prices are really based on how we're doing on our exports. So we met with the chief agricultural negotiator, Doug McCallop. He handles all the trade, agricultural trade for America. And the two big issues that we're very concerned about that we're watching, obviously, is Brazilian tariff on ethanol exports. Brazil implemented a 16% tariff last year on ethanol. That will go up to 18% next year. And the Doug McCallop, the negotiator, is working with Brazil to try to get that taken off. That has really hit our export market. We were doing about 6 million gallons of export ethanol a year, and now we're down to about 400,000. So it's a really significant issue, and we've got to change that. The same thing with Mexico. Obviously, 25% of our corn, export corn, goes to Mexico, and they said they're going to ban it by 2025. Again, talking with our agricultural trade negotiator, he said that we're moving forward through the USMCA on what that negotiation, what that contract said, and how to go through these issues. But the bottom line is it will probably have to take a new Mexican president to really change it, because the current Mexican president just is not supportive of any type of GMO corn, and that's a grave concern for us.
He does explain that sitting on more than just one committee helps him be more effective for ag.
I sit on the Agriculture Committee, and I sit on Ways and Means that deals with trade and tax. So I'm there for the producers.
It's Agriculture Today.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
When are my Republican colleagues going to put up or shut up?
Chip Roy is a Republican member of the House from Texas.
We have bills voting down by impeaching Alejandro Mayorkas. They go down. We have bills trying to cut spending, and we have games being played by appropriators right here. Sitting in the Rules Committee night before last, I had appropriators looking at me and talking about the side deals that were cut to keep spending money, to set up funds and slush funds. That's the way this town operates. Slush funds, backroom deals, continuing to spend money we don't have. I am sick and tired of it. I didn't come here for second place. I didn't come here for more excuses. I didn't come here to have the Speaker of the House assume the position and in 17 days pass a continuing resolution off the floor of this House through suspension of the rules. $400 billion, including an extension of the farm bill that doesn't do anything about the Chinese Communist Party ownership of our lands. Doesn't do anything to protect small ag and to protect small ranchers from big ag and all the big corporate adventures getting rich based on the policies from this body. When is it going to be enough? Is $34 trillion of debt not enough? $2 trillion deficits not enough? Another American dying from fentanyl or from cartels? Terrorists coming across our southern border not enough? Are babies being put in ovens in Israel? Not enough. We have the Senate yesterday who chose expansion of the Internal Revenue Service over standing with Israel. And what are my Republican colleagues doing? They are all too happy to have this vote go down today and get on their airplanes and go home for turkey at Thanksgiving. Why aren't we putting another bill on the floor of the House right now and sending it over to the Senate to shove it down their throats to say that we, Republicans, stand for cutting spending? We, Republicans, stand for standing with Israel. We, Republicans, stand for securing the border of the United States. No. Let's just go back and go raise some money so we can do more fundraisers so we can then try to get elected so we can come back here and offer more excuses for why we don't get the job done. You know what the excuse will be next year? Oh, well, we won the House and we won the Senate, if we could even do that. But we don't have 60 in the Senate, Chip. We can't do what you want to do because we don't have 60 votes in the Senate. I've heard nothing but excuses for the 20 years that I've either been a staffer in this town, back in Texas watching it closely, or now back as a member. Nothing but excuses. Nothing but empty promises. And the time for those excuses is over.
He's also expressed frustration with the Farm Bill. The Farm Bill was extended 1 year as part of the CR.
Today we took down a rule. Yes, because it was a closed rule. We had a closed rule, which means you can't amend it. The Rules Committee put forward a bill for Iran to go, quote, freeze the $6 billion sitting in Qatar through a closed rule. We were not allowed to amend it. Such is the way things operate in the People's House if we don't police it every single day. We changed things in January. We've been opening the place up, but that was a reversion right back to the mean. We talk a big game about Ukraine. We wear a little blue and yellow pins. Look at us. Look how compassionate we are to help people. But what the hell are we actually doing? Blank checks to Ukraine to go into the pockets of oligarchs, massive corruption, all getting documented by the day. We send a bill over to the Senate. Democrats kill it because they'd rather side with the IRS than Israel. And we can't even move a bill to hip check the Iranians who want to kill us and exterminate the Jews in Israel. They don't hide behind it. They don't shy away from it. They openly say it. And here we are, and I'm in an empty chamber because everybody wants to go home and have their turkey, and we haven't done anything.
It's Agriculture Today.
This is Agriculture Today.
So what we're seeing is very strong banks across the board. Loan delinquencies are down. They're hiring more employees, and they're really helping that economy turn around in the rural areas.
Ed Elfman is Senior Vice President of Ag and Rural Banking Policy with the American Bankers Association.
So we couldn't be happier where we are in a lot of ways with agriculture and rural lending. Obviously, there's things we want to do to help those folks more, and I think we'll get into that a little bit with Farm Bill and some other things we're working on. But overall, the state of rural lending is very good right now.
So speaking of the Farm Bill, what are priorities for rural bankers?
Biggest issue for us right now in the Farm Bill is increasing the loan limits for FSA guaranteed loan programs. Currently, there are about 2.2 million tops is what you can get for an FSA guaranteed loan. We'd like to see that go to 3.5 million. Why? Because we're seeing that, especially on the beginning farmer side of the world, land is getting so expensive that it's hard for them to buy the land they need to. And that access to credit to buy land is one of the biggest barriers for beginning farmers right now. So we'd like to increase that amount to reflect where land prices have been going. Hopefully we can get there. We tried to get there 5 years ago and got halfway there. We're hoping to get all the way to 3.5 now. A couple other things that all kind of tie together into this loan limits discussion. The down payment assistance program needs to be fixed at USDA. It wasn't indexed to inflation in the last Farm Bill. We get that fixed. That's going to help a lot of beginning folks as well, right? If you have some assistance from USDA to get your down payment, and then we can do the guaranteed loan on the rest of it. Additionally, we're looking at bringing back the interest assistance program. Interest rates are rising. They've been rising for a while. We'll see if they level out. But people might remember there was an interest assistance program for years, but when you have interest assistance of 4%, with 4% interest, it doesn't quite work. It works a lot better when you have an interest. And it might be a way to, again, help beginning farmers knock down their total monthly cost by just knocking that interest payment down and then helping them cash flow better to really establish themselves and move forward. Two more things to mention here as well. Beginning farmers, I've talked about them a little bit already, but issues with the program right now doesn't quite work the way it should from a lending perspective. For example, there's a lot of paperwork that goes into getting a beginning farmer loan. We'd like to reduce that. There isn't enough use of electronic signature and things like that. We want to go that way from a USDA bank relationship standpoint. So we speed that process up and help those beginning farmers. Plus, we have issues with structure. And what I mean by that is, you have a land holding entity and someone wants to be an operator, but they're not considered a farmer per se. We got to get that figured out a little bit, because as we look into the future and we get more and more farmers that might not come from farming backgrounds, they're going to have different structures to put their farms together. So we want to make sure that we're anticipating maybe where that goes in the future. And then the last thing I want to mention, rural development, we really need more consistent funding in that program. I don't know how many folks that might be listening have tried to do a rural development loan in the last few years. it can take a long time to get that done. We just like to speed that up again, because if you're trying to do an expansion on your business and hire some new employees, you don't want to wait a year to get that money in hand, right? You want to do it now, and you want to get moving, because you might have a client that needs you to expand your operation. So that's another aspect we're looking at, is the rural development side of the world.
It's Agriculture Today.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
Corn growers are wrapping up the harvest of what USDA says will be a record large crop, up 11% from last season. As to what's going to happen to that crop,
really all of the major use categories we expect to go up,
including feed use, ethanol production, and exports. USDA Outlook Board Chairman Mark Jankowski says all those uses will be up from a year ago, but not up enough to prevent a sizable 58% buildup in year-ending stocks. And that prospect is certainly affecting corn prices.
The market prices are low. We can see that in the futures markets and the cash prices that farmers are receiving right now.
Last year, growers got an average price $6.54 a bushel.
And right now, as of November, we're forecasting $4.85 per bushel, so down about almost $1.70 from last year.
A 25% drop in price. As one Iowa producer told me the other day, yes, prices are down. He hopes to make up some of that in volume. Gary Crawford, Washington.